Construction meets the world's most popular board game in new Monopoly Construction Edition. Amass or possibly lose great fortunes. Every space on the board is packed with both iconic construction brands and incredible infrastructure projects in this new exciting edition of Monopoly. You'll need to make smart decisions to come out on top. Have you got what it takes to succeed in the world of construction? Search Construction Monopoly to order now.
It's Wednesday, the 17th of May, 2023, and this is Reconstruction, the Construction Index podcast with me, David Taylor, and him, Phil Bishop, talking about some of the latest happenings in the UK construction industry. How are you this morning, Phil?
I'm very well indeed, but you don't sound terribly well. Some strange heavy breathing at your end. What's going on over there?
Well, I've got to tell our listener that it's not me doing the heavy breathing. If you hear any snuffling or any other sort of rather suspect noises, it's not me. It's Paddy, and Paddy is a dog, and I'm looking after him for a friend. And he's old and he's smelly, and he won't leave me alone. He follows. He's always 3 feet away from me wherever I go.
He sounds perfect, does Paddy? Why you?
Well, as I say, he sticks to me like glue, which is a mixed blessing, as he's so smelly. But occasionally he goes AWOL. He literally went AWOL the last time we had him. We're looking after him for friends. As they're off to a wedding. They're going to be gone until Sunday, and it's only Wednesday. But we had him a few weeks ago, and he escaped. He ran off one Sunday morning, and I came down to feed the dogs and the cats, and there was a dog missing. And I couldn't understand where he'd gone. He just vanished. And then I realised he'd got out through the cat flap.
Ooh.
And sprung into action and alerted the village grapevine, which luckily worked flawlessly, because within half an hour, I'd had a notification that somebody thought they'd seen him, followed shortly by somebody who said they thought their mother had him, followed shortly by a confirmation that indeed this neighbour's mother did have him 2 miles away. He'd gone over the fields, up the lane, and was heading in the direction of home.
Blimey.
So luckily they'd apprehended him and had him there. So he's a bit of a handful.
When I was a mutt, we had a dog that went on holiday and was put into boarding kennels and escaped from the boarding kennels. We knew nothing about this, days before mobile phones and contact numbers and everything, until we got back. Anyway, Peggy escaped from the boarding kennels and turned up a couple of miles away at the Bramhope post house, where the staff took pity on Peggy, and she had her own room for the weekend with all the leftover food from the restaurant.
So oh, my God.
She did very well. She knew what side her bed was buttered on that one.
Well, I've blocked up the cat flap, or rather, I've locked it. And Paddy will, at the moment, he's gone about 12 feet away from me, sniffing the rug. I don't know what he's found, but he's making some pretty, I don't know if you can pick this up on the microphone, but he's making some rather pig-like snuffling noises at the moment. Forgive me. I just want to emphasise that it's not me making these noises.
We'll try and ignore it.
So will I.
Should we get back to the main business of the day, David, and talk about the construction industry?
Yes, indeed. Yeah. What's been happening? It's been quite a busy week, hasn't it?
Well, it's actually been quite a slow. I mean, it's because of all these bank holidays that we mentioned last time, it's a bit of a slow month news-wise. But the big story, unfortunately, happened the day after we last recorded our podcast last time round. And if you remember, a fortnight ago, we talked about how Persimmon had taken a chunk and invested in Top Hat, Goldman Sachs-backed modular house builder, Persimmon and Aviva. And we talked at some length about that and about the problems that the modular house builders had. And then, blow me, the following day, completely making our conversation out of date very quickly, Legal & General announced that they were, well, not closing the factory. I think they want to sell the factory, but they're stopping production at their house building factory near Selby, Sherburn and Elmet, and they're pulling out of the prefab market. Now, they're still Legal and General own Carla Homes and have other house building interests and still build masses of houses. So they're still in the house building market, but not in the modern methods of the prefabs.
And yeah,
it was sort of a surprise because we didn't see it coming. But on the other hand, it's absolutely not a surprise. I mean, something had to give.
Yeah,
because they've just been pumping in money hand over fist, as have the shareholders of Top Hat and similar people with these big factories.
Yeah, Ilka.
And they've just not had the orders. I mean, if you've not got the constant throughput, when you've got that, I mean, this factory Legal and General have got, it's got capacity of 3,000 homes a year, and they were doing absolutely nothing like that. And if you've not got a production line that's going churn, material in and product out,
yeah,
if that's not constant, it's not a factory. It's a workshop.
That's true, yeah.
Definition of a factory is constant. You know, it's a production line, and there simply are not the orders for, you know, however great the product is. There's not the demand there to pump it through.
No, I think that was very interesting because they did say, I can't remember who it was, somebody from Legal and General said that, and I think this is a quote, a strong and predictable site pipeline is required to make LNG modular homes a successful, sustainable business. And I think that really puts it in a nutshell. We've talked about this so many times in the past, but, you know, we all know the supposed benefits of offsite manufacturing, which is, you know, quality, safety, efficiency, all these things. And people say, you know, you're manufacturing houses in factory controlled conditions, so, you know, it's all under cover, it's your quality is going to be better, it's you've got good quality assurance, it's safer than doing it all on site, all the rest of it. But as you say, factories require a constant flow. They, you know, you cannot stop and start a factory and expect it to run efficiently. So I think this is really the main stumbling block for some of these off-site manufacturers, is that they need that constant flow. And this is a huge frustration for people who want to, well, everybody in the house building industry, I should think, not just the off-site people. The whole market at the moment is so flaky and unpredictable.
'Twas ever thus.
Well, yes, that's true, but that's the nature of the market, isn't it?
But the traditional,
it fluctuates.
Traditional, yes, exactly. But traditional house building, there is some flexibility there. And in the olden days, yeah, if you're a house builder, you build other things as well. And, you know, you go to where the work is and you pull people off that job as it comes to an end, and you know.
Yeah,
they're itinerant. They move around. Now, a factory workforce. I hope you talked about the charms and the benefits of factories. It is deemed to be a more civilized lifestyle working in a factory because, you know, it's more, may not be 9 to 5, but you're going to the same place of work every day, and, you know, you're putting your hat and your coat on the same peg every day and eating in the same canteen every day, and that's that kind of stability of and that's you can build a career in the factory in the town where you live.
Yeah,
it's not got the inherent, what's the noun of peripatetic anyway, peripateticness of traditional construction.
Yeah,
but if orders slow in a factory, you've got no choice but to lay people off. You can't move them to another factory in another town. You probably haven't got another factory in another town. It's not, hasn't got all the orders either, and they will leave the industry never to return.
Yeah, sure. I mean, occasionally you get a press release from a plant manufacturer like JCB, and they'll say, you know, we've had to lay off X number of usually agency workers rather than full time.
That's how
employees.
They manage the
yeah ebb exactly
and flow, yes.
But of course, they've got a more stable market than the house builders. And they can keep building machines, and even if they don't sell them straight away, they can store them, or their distributors can store them. You can't do that with houses. You know, you've got to build a house.
You can't stockpile them, can you?
No, you can't. So I think this is it's possibly the sector's Achilles heel. Maybe this is why, you know, the off-site people haven't made the progress that they said that they thought they could do. It's because the market won't allow them to do that.
And what's interesting is that if Legal and General cannot sustain a 3,000 unit capacity factory, it doesn't bode well for Top Hat with its new factory in Corby with 4,500 unit capacity. with all the whizzy new robotic machinery that they've apparently got in there, and materials handling machinery they've got in. It's a big challenge. I suppose, you know, it could be a case of last one standing wins, and if everyone else falls by the wayside, and top hat are the, you know, the last one there. I mean, there are several others. We've talked about Ilkey in the past, and there are others too. But what I actually see happening, the end game is, we'll be shipping them all in from China.
Yeah, almost certainly. That has happened, hasn't it? Like, haven't people?
Yeah.
I mean, off-site manufacturers in China have been supplying the UK market. I don't know if it's in the house building sector or other sectors, but that has happened in the past.
And Africa, North Africa, was it in? I've got Brighton.
Oh, that's
in my
right.
Head.
Yes,
I think it's in Brighton, somewhere on the south coast. I seem to remember.
We talked about that recently. Something from Morocco, wasn't it?
Yes, it's something like a student accommodation project. It was not super high rise, but it wasn't individual houses.
Yeah,
and they had basically container sized modules, but they actually built a factory. We built a factory in Morocco specially for this contract. They won the contract and thought, let's go build a factory in Morocco. We've talked about this before last year sometime, I think, which we said at the time was a bit of a warning sign of the direction of travel in all of this.
Yeah. It's as you said earlier, people have been pouring millions and millions into these off-site factories and in the hope that it's going to work. But it all comes back to the nature of the market, the house building market, which is probably unique in the UK. It's not like it is on the continent. But also government housing policy. I mean, the government's been saying for years and years that it must increase the number of houses built in the UK as if it was the builder. And of course, it's not. It's saying we must build. And it's really talking about the house building firms, but they're commercial enterprises, and they're not going to build houses that they can't sell. And they don't want to build houses that they can't sell at a decent price. And so there are all sorts of factors which are at play here. And this is why the market is up and down, depending on things like demand, availability, planning, interest rates, of course. As interest rates go up, of course, it's more expensive to get a mortgage. And so there are so many factors affecting the market that it just doesn't have the stability and the predictability that you need for factory mass production.
But it could do, because you're assuming that it's all a private sector market. Now, I find it interesting. We'll come on a bit later to talk about the relative health of the house building market versus the infrastructure sector and how different bits of the industry are performing. But this supposedly fiscally conservative, right-wing conservative government is investing, is spending a lot of public money on public infrastructure of dubious economic merit, HS2 I'm specifically talking about.
Yes.
The economic case is dubious at best. The economic case for building HS2 is reasonably sound, although you could just dig holes and fill them in again to achieve the same effect. It's pumping money into the economy, and it's acting as a motor to the economy, and it's generating economic growth and all of that good stuff. Now they see the benefit of that for infrastructure, for railway lines, and for nuclear power stations. We actually need power stations, nuclear or otherwise. Mm-hmm. We need to generate more power of some kind. So there is at least a political social rationale behind spending public money on power stations, but broadly, their central government is relaxed about spending money on infrastructure. House building, it is not. And obviously, it puts money homes England ways for pump priming, but that's small beer. House building used to be the preserve of local authorities. It still is by and large, but with housing associations who are sort of local authorities. And they are severely restricted in what public money they're allowed to invest. If the government let or was relaxed about local authority spending as it was about central government spending in the construction industry in general, local authorities could be building masses and masses of public sector housing to get to this 300,000 units target that central government sets and somehow hopes that the private sector will reach and doesn't allow the public sector to have much input to to do much more than nibble around the edges, to be honest. So there's kind of a contradiction there.
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, you know, the phrase council houses isn't one you hear very often these days. There was a time when, of course, every local authority had its housing stock and maintained it and, you know, enlarged it as was required. And then along came Margaret Thatcher and allowed tenants to buy their houses. And of course, local authorities no longer built houses to any great extent. And there's been talk about councils building houses again, although I don't think much has actually happened as a result.
There's massive social housing, and that's equivalent.
Sure,
That's like, I mean, whether you know, a state school is an academy run by a private academy trust, or whether it's a, you know, a council state school, it's still effectively a state school
in the public sector. Yeah, that's true.
And whether, I think, to my mind, I know there are nuances and arguments for and against council-run housing and housing association-run housing, but I put them in the same public sector bucket.
Yeah. So, I mean, what's your panacea for the housing market then? How are we going to stop these off-site manufacturers going bust?
Outsource to China. That's the answer. No, the
I don't think that's the answer, Phil.
Well, Keir Starmer, who is looking likely to be the next prime minister, gave an interview to the Times reported this morning saying that he's going to relax greenbelt restrictions, which makes me gulp a little bit. He's got to be a bit careful on how he sells that one, but he's obviously clearly going for more house building, and I can imagine that he might give councils more borrowing power to build social housing. And as we've talked before, while the private house buyers may not be forming an orderly queue to buy prefabs, in the public sector, they have no choice and they'll get what they're given, thanks.
Sure.
So with this sort of with a statist approach, yeah, fill up the top hat, the legal and general, and the prefab factories.
Well, it is true that the housing associations, the registered social landlords, are probably the biggest hope that the off-site sector has.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because they have been, you know, fully behind the idea, because for them it makes perfect sense. It reduces costs, it delivers the product efficiently, or could do, and of course they're in it for the long run. They're not going to buy properties and then try and sell them at a profit, you know, five years down the line. That dog's just farted.
Charming.
I've lost my chain of thought now. Dear.
And your sense of smell.
No, I haven't lost that, unfortunately. Okay. Paddy. Jesus. say something to take my mind off it, Phil. Say something. All right, and so Paddy stinks, and so does the housing market in the UK. Give the social landlords more money.
I mentioned the relative health of the house building versus the infrastructure sector of the industry, but let's park that for a minute. I want to talk about a story I was going to write yesterday on the back of something I read in The Guardian, and then stopped because I realised actually it's not the story that it looked like it was going to be. There's a story in The Guardian Monday this week, headline: adverts claiming products are carbon neutral by using offsetting face UK ban. Guardian says, exclusive, the advertising watchdog is going to begin stricter enforcement on use of terms such as carbon neutral amid concerns over offsets. Now, you and I have talked before, and I think we broadly agree, that offsetting is better than not offsetting, but it's cheating. If you dip into your pocket and chuck some money at a third-party agency, that does not make your concrete any less carboniferous. It does not make your product any cleaner or greener.
No,
just
right.
Because you've chucked some money into a hat somewhere. And yet this is what industry is doing. And this headline and the stamp first, the introductory paragraph of this Guardian article gave every indication that it was reporting with some authority that if you were in the business of offsetting, you weren't allowed to claim that you were carbon neutral. If that's how you achieved your carbon neutrality. And I thought, this is a story I'll can write about how all these companies, you know, cement manufacturers, the cement products that claim to be carbon neutral. There's one particular cement product on the market. You can buy a bag of it. That's not carbon neutral. Or you can pay extra for the same bag, pay, you know, 10 or 15% more for it.
And they'll plant a tree for you.
And that becomes carbon neutral.
Yeah.
It's I think it's called, you know, Concrete Prime and Concrete Prime Zero or something.
Yes, that's
exactly
right.
Something the same like product, but you pay more and suddenly it's gotten it.
Yeah.
Bollocks. Clearly that's bollocks. And I thought the ASA were going to clamp down on all of this. And it's not just the product manufacturers. BAM, MACE, Kia, all the big contractors.
Yeah,
they all say, oh, yeah, we either are or will be carbon neutral because we're going to pay money to be able to claim it.
I mean, to be fair, Phil, I mean, I think a lot of them are doing other stuff as well. You know, they're...
No, of course they are. Yeah. It's not just doing that.
They always say, oh, we've done this, we've got electric cars in our fleet, and, you know, we're using battery power plants, you know, this, that, and the other. And they say, and we finally achieved carbon neutrality because the stuff that we can't actually tackle directly, we're offsetting.
No, the truth of it is... We're trying really, really hard. We have improved, but we can't quite get there. Mm-hmm. But because we feel guilty, we're going to give money to someone else who's going to do some good stuff somewhere else. It's got nothing to do with what we do. Unless, of course, you're that company that buys a forest in Gloucestershire. Beard, that was it.
That was near Bristol, I believe, yeah. Yeah, I'd love to think that Beard had their tongue in cheek when they said that, but I doubt that they did. Yeah, they bought a woodland and said, you know, why plant trees when you can just buy them? Yeah.
Going back to this Guardian story, anyway.
Yeah.
As you read down it, the headline writer had clearly not properly read the story or didn't properly understand the story. Because if you read down it, the Advertising Standards Authority is not banning companies claiming that they're carbon neutral when they're offsetting.
Sure.
What it's doing is clamping down on the claims of the offsetting agencies.
Yeah.
So it's the offsetting agencies, not in our case, we're not talking about the construction companies or the product manufacturers. We're talking about the agencies that they give money to go, you know, plant trees in Guatemala or wherever it may be. And The Guardian quotes a number of large companies who have used an offsetting company whose claims about the effectiveness of their tree planting have been shown to be dubious and questionable. And so what the Advertising Standards Authority is saying is you can't claim your carbon neutral if you offset through an organisation whose offsetting is dodgy and not properly accredited.
Yeah.
But if you're a properly accredited offsetting organisation and you're doing good stuff and your offsetting works, then your customers can claim they're carbon neutral, which doesn't get us any further forward, really.
No, it doesn't.
I'm concerned.
I mean, the story that you mentioned in The Guardian was linked to a previous story that they ran in January, I think, this year. They looked into this carbon offsetting organization called Vera, based in Washington, D.C., I think. And they did the number crunching and the headline is revealed more than 90% of rainforest carbon offsets by biggest certifier are worthless. So, you know, it is just smoke and mirrors. It's nothing more than posturing. And of course, the thing is, like everything else, a market has evolved around this issue, and people thought, hang on a second, let's set up an agency, an offsetting agency. Call it Vera, if you like, and we will sponsor projects in Peru, I think, and places like this, where we'll plant plants and do good things, and people can pay us to do that, and then we'll certify their carbon offsets. And the whole thing is just effectively a scam. I mean, I don't think that they are necessarily criminals who are set out to deceive people, but they're certainly being very liberal with the truth, if not
it's called marketing.
It is just marketing. And as you say, we've mentioned this many times in the past, that organizations, it's become a competition. You cannot be a tier one contractor and not go through the motions of offsetting your carbon emissions and doing various other good, shiny, attractive things to show that your carbon footprint is squeaky clean and tiny. If the rest of your rivals are doing it, you can't sit there and not do it. You've got to do it. Otherwise, people will go to the others. It's you know, it is a marketing box to tick.
And rather like the social value culture and box ticking and social value industry that's cropped up, the big organisations, big construction companies have got departments full of people who hugely believe in what they're doing. I mean, social value, they're people who are very, very committed to to good works in the community. They've got sustainability teams who are hugely committed to reducing the carbon footprint of the organisation. And they're doing great things. So this is not to detract from the individuals who are doing the work and are achieving things. What we're talking about here, and I think we agree on this, it's the corporate culture that drives it. There may be some good outcomes, but I'm not sure the corporate motive is entirely pure.
I think the whole sort of carbon reduction market, if you want to call it, the whole
industry,
the whole industry is needs a good looking at. Because I mean, going right back to the UK government, we've got a legally binding 2050 zero carbon target. That's meaningless because, I mean, legally binding, who's going to be in the dock if we don't hit it? Which most people agree now, we're probably not going to hit it. Is it going to be David Cameron? Who was the Prime Minister when we made this commitment and enshrined it in law? I probably was David Cameron. It might have been.
It was Coalition, so you can blame Clegg.
Oh, right, yeah. Poor old Clegg. But it's meaningless. And then, of course, the government itself sticks to the target, but is constantly compromising. It's not coherent.
I agree that we won't hit the target, or unlikely hit the target, as we currently understand it.
Oh, yeah, but it'll be redrawn.
It'll be redefined. These things will be redefined.
Yeah. But then there's a government saying, oh, well, we need to develop a new coal mine up in Cumbria because we need it for the steel industry. And our steel industry is down on its uppers at the moment. And if you want a steel industry, we need coking coal. Therefore, we need a coal mine in Cumbria. And people sort of point out, well, you know, how does that, that's all very well, you know, but how does that sit with your zero carbon policy? You know,
the coal mine will give all its profits to tree planting in Peru.
Ah, of course. I didn't realise it was that easy, Phil. There's a chap, another story, I think it's one of yours, about a green campaigner in East Anglia, in Norwich, who's a PhD, he's an environmental...
Ah, Dr. Boswell, the diarist.
Dr. Boswell, that's right, who's actually taking the government to court over its road building plans in Norfolk. And he's pointing out, and I haven't checked his claims, but he's pointing out that the government hasn't done any joined up thinking or calculations about the carbon emissions that will result from the building of these, I think, three road projects.
It's actually quite hysterical. Go on. It's extraordinary.
Well, I mean, no, that's it. He's saying, you know, there's the government. I'm trying to find the story here.
I'll take it up. The three bits of the A47, which are being upgraded to steel carriageway, as I believe it. Highways, what do they call this week? Highways England?
National highways.
They look at one stretch and they go, well, that's the environmental impact of that bit. Then they look at the next stretch, that's a different project, and that's the environmental impact of that bit. And they look at the third bit and measure the... And of course, as this guy Andrew Boswell is pointing out, who is familiar with these things, is an environmental scientist and a former county councillor in Norfolk and Norwich City Councillor, so he's up to speed on what's going on in the area and the science, say, well, actually, your three individual things aren't the same as the environmental impact of it's one big project done in three chunks, and therefore you should be looking at the environmental impact of the whole.
Yeah.
Which sounds pretty straightforward to me.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, I haven't looked into his claims or added them up. I'm assuming that what he's saying is that if you take the three projects individually, they don't add up to what they would add up to in terms of carbon emissions if you considered them all together. I don't know how that works, but I'm assuming that that's what his claim is, and that the government is maybe by breaking it up in this way, able to dodge a claim of, you know, it's going to be X million tons of CO2 resulting from the construction of these road projects, because it can take them one by one and say that it comes within a certain threshold. I don't know exactly what it is, but there are loads of projects which the government is looking at the moment, and they don't seem to be coherent. I mean,
if you take it to its ludicrous conclusion, if you accept that, I mean, yes, when you build a road, part of its negative environmental impact is the materials that goes into making the road. The more long-term environmental impact is the, at the moment, fume spewing vehicles that go along it.
Yeah.
And even after all our cars are battery powered, vehicles are battery powered, it's got, you know, lithium mines have been, I mean, let's not pretend that battery powered cars are environmentally friendly.
No, quite.
So cars moving along the road is an environmental impact.
Sure.
But I remember, and I don't remember how it works, but something in my maths A level, there was something to do with measuring the area under curves where it came to differentiation and integration, where you segmented into tiny, 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 tiny little bits, and it was accumulation of all these tiny, tiny bits is how you measured it. So if instead of breaking this road project into three projects, they broke it up into about 25 million road projects, so that, yeah, well, it wouldn't even need to be that many, actually. It just needs to be a bit of road that there's a length of a car. Right. So you say, well, that length of road that we're building, no car can move on that. Therefore, there's going to be no emissions spewed from a car on this stretch of road.
Right.
Therefore, this entire 20 mile of road we're building in 2 meter long segments will have no vehicle emissions because no cars will be able to move on our individual segments of it.
Sure.
That's the ludicrous conclusion of it.
Well, if that's Dr. Boswell's argument, if that's the way he sees it, I can see his point.
I don't think that's me saying it.
Oh, well, okay. But I can see how you can massage the figures by doing that. It's like shuffling a deck of cards, and you can deal them out the way you want. So I don't suppose that Dr. Boswell will get very far with this, but he will get some publicity and he'll raise the issue. So I suppose
you say that other campaigns, other legal challenges have worked. There've been several cases where Department of Transport has been beaten on these things lately, and there've been cases where it's run back to the drawing board, knowing that it was going to lose before you know the case came to be heard.
Right.
So. No, and we said before, for the government, while they're happy to spend money on HS2, they're quite happy to pare back in the budget statement earlier this year, March it was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
To cut road spending because they haven't got the money.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's not true. They got the money, but the money doesn't buy as much anymore.
And I can't remember, but did they say that there was a silver lining to that particular cloud in terms of carbon emissions? Because they missed a trick if they didn't.
You're right. I think they'd be making a rod for their own back if they started using that one. But we've talked about road building being cut, which leads us on to, I was going to say, we're going to talk about some numbers, some industry,
yes,
state of trade surveys and forecasts. Some of these are wet finger in the air and see which way the wind is blowing, and some are rather more substantive. And let's start with the, and I think we can take encouragement from the fact that the governor of the Bank of England has been getting his forecasts so wrong lately on inflation and so forth, that basically economists can say what they want and they're always wrong, and at the same time they're always right, because massage numbers and make them mean whatever you want. But important newsworthy report out from the Construction Product Association, which has big economists working for it on its staff. Beginning of this month, they put out their spring forecasts predicting, since GB, Great Britain, so England, Scotland, Wales,
right,
construction output will fall by 6.4% this year. And this is a downgrading. The start of this year, their winter forecast was saying it's going to be 4.7% down this year. They're now saying it's going to be worse this year, but it's going to rebound a bit next year, 1.1%. Now you would think, oh, good, there's growth, you know, in 2024. But if you go down 6.4% and you bounce back 1.1, that's a pretty rubbish. You know, you're still quite a lot down on
coming up from a low base. Yeah.
Oh, these growth figures are all slightly skewed by the fact that we had that enormous collapse of the COVID lockdown in 2020, and a spectacular rebound simply because of what we were comparing it to. So it's almost a bit like when you anchor a pogo stick in the ground and ping the top of it, and it goes boing, 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 boing. So we're doing a bit of that at the moment, I think, with our construction cycles. And not only the COVID thing, we've I want to call it the invasion of Ukraine, but the government keep trying to persuade me to call it Putin's illegal invasion.
Yeah,
that's going on, and Brexit, which let's not forget, is still having an impact on things.
Yeah.
So anyway, the Construction Products Association forecast. The story there is private housing is particularly going down. 17% fall in output this year.
Yeah.
And that's all to do with the shock of the September 22 mini budget, which pushed up interest rates, crashed everything. We're still just recovering from that. So that had a massive impact on the housing market.
Hmm.
But what else are they saying? What are they saying? Infrastructure, spring forecasts growing 0.7% this year. So not much.
These are all small margins, aren't they?
Yeah, they were saying beginning of this year they thought infrastructure is going to grow 2.4% this year, infrastructure output we're talking about, and they've halved that from 2.4 to 1.2. So I suspect, well, that can't be, if you're talking about this year, that can't be the impact of government cuts, but it must be the impact of inflation, I suppose. Yeah. The fact that projects have got more expensive, with the budgets that are being spent, less work is being done. So they don't state that, but that's got to be what that's all about. So yeah, basically this year is worse than we thought it was going to be.
Yeah, and there've been stories since then, haven't there? Similar predictions of decline in various sectors.
Well, yes and no. Well, certainly house building. And let's have a look at the RICS, Royal Institution of Chartered Surveyors. They sort of suggest that overall construction, it's turned a corner. Their workload activity sentiment has improved. Now, they're like the Civil Engineering Contractors Association. Their surveys use this horrible thing where they talk about a positive net balance of plus 3%. And this gets reported of 3% of surveyors think this. No, often what it means is that 80% don't have a clue. And of the remaining 20% who do have a view, hang on, if 20 think that, what's the net balance of 3? It would be 12 versus 9, wouldn't it? That's 21.
Okay. Yeah, you're the one with the maths A level, like Phil.
Yeah, but the point is that of those who have a view of whether things are going to go up or down, three more think that it's going to go up.
Yeah.
So it's all very slight, these sort of net balances. But there's a very slight emphasis on or bias towards surveyors who have seen their workloads improve and expect it to continue improving. Mm. Whereas if you look at, particularly about housing, here's a good recent survey. National House Building Council. It's not the whole market, but they insure something like 80% of new homes for warranty claims.
Mm-hmm.
And their registrations, National House Building Council, say that there's a 40% decline in the first quarter of this year on new home registrations compared to the first quarter of 2022. 40% down.
When you say registrations, does that mean starts?
I think that's not completions. I don't know when they're registered, when actually they start, you know, putting, setting up a site and moving earth and fencing it off, or whether it's slightly after that. But it's the front end, I think, yeah. rather than completion.
Yeah, yeah.
But exactly what point of the front end, I'm not sure. And that NHB registration is a much better bellwether, factual bellwether, than anything like CPA forecasts, or we've talked previously about Purchasing Managers Index, yeah. which are asking people, how do you feel? And often the response you get can be different, you know, before lunch when they haven't had enough coffee to after lunch when they've been down the pub.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of sentiment in it, whereas the NHBC thing is fact.
It's figures, yeah.
And the other, which I prefer, the other ones which are fact and good are, well, there's two. One is from the Construction Products Association, again, the actual sales data they put out, but also the UK Builders Merchants,
yeah.
because that is automatic point of sale. Everyone's got electric tills, and that the what goes through, and I think it represents, again, something like 80-85% of yeah. UK Builders Merchants, and that it does include Northern Ireland. Everything that goes through that till is automatically collated centrally and says, this is what has been sold. Then trouble is we're always a month behind. So the latest numbers we've got are for February, and next week we will get, or maybe the week after, we will get March mm-hmm. data rather than April data, whereas the PMI is much quicker. They ask them at the end of April, and beginning of May, 5 days later, they tell us what they found. But builders merchant sales were up by money, of course, but they're down again by volume.
Because this is for March.
Cost more. This is for February.
February.
The last one we've
February,
had.
Yeah.
Yeah. February to January, volumes are up by 13%. But year on year, builders merchants have been seeing their volumes, the actual amount of stuff, the yeah. number of bricks, the number of wheelbarrows, the number of safety gloves, whatever they sell, has gone down.
Mm.
They were, for all of last year, taking, you know, more and more money, except from less and less stuff. But even the takings are getting pretty slim. Their February takings are only up by less than 0.1% year on year. So that shows that things are...
Inflation at work, isn't it?
Exactly, yes. Yeah. But overall, the overall story of what's going on is infrastructure is, broadly speaking, steaming along at the moment because of the big projects, whereas house buildings, we mentioned with that 40% decline, going really badly.
Mm.
That seemed to be the story until Barber ABI, who are one of these organisations that employ researchers to tot up numbers and follow who's won what contracts and what's going on, they've reported that total contract awards in April fell by 32%,
mm.
Which is pretty big, to the lowest month since May 2020. So it's the slowest month of contract awards, April was, for 3 years. Sorry, infrastructure contracts awards was the slowest for 3 years.
Yeah.
April wasn't the slowest overall, but infrastructure contracts awards is all I'm going to come on to say. We say that infrastructure's been driving or keeping the construction industry going. Contract awards and infrastructure fell 71% in April, and that was the lowest month in
more than
years.
More than other sectors, yeah.
Yeah, to just 400 million.
Yeah.
That's hardly anything. Residential contract awards fell 40% to 1.4 billion, and even worse, the value of planning approvals was down 50% as
yeah.
well. And that's the value of planning approvals, which means, obviously, each planning... Inflation,
sure.
It means the number of things being built is down even more than 50% because of that inflation effect.
Yeah.
So
it's a fairly bleak outlook.
It's pretty grim. It's pretty grim. But, as we always say, it's a remarkably resilient industry. And unless you're in the off-site manufacturing sector, you can pivot. You can go move into some other market. You can spread your wings. You can even, you know, bid for work overseas, get some exports going.
Yeah, I guess some people are doing that. But I bet everybody's saying, thank God for HS2 at the moment.
Yeah, it's about sizable. And I was going to say sizable. Hinkley Point, of course.
Yeah.
Which I've still not been to. Have you had a chance to get to Hinkley Point?
It's just up the road, well, relatively up the M5 from me. But no, I haven't. The nearest I've been is... up on the M5 where I can see those new T pylons stretching away into the distance. And that's the only sign that I've seen of any, you know, obviously those T-pylons are carrying the cables, which will carry the electricity from the new nuclear power station.
Did you read that story the other day in one of the papers about those? Apparently those T-pylons are not very popular with the neighbours.
Oh, I know. I didn't know that, but I have to say I'm not surprised.
They knock out. I think it's because does it make the cables are lower than old fashioned pylons?
They do. Sure, but yeah, I think they probably are.
They're noisy, they vibrate, and they knock out the internet or the broadband.
Oh, do they? No, I didn't know that.
This is what this article was suggesting. It's quite an in-depth piece. Saying they're a problem. They're not going down well.
Well, if you remember, when they held a design competition, various architects and designers entered this competition to find a design of a new pylon to replace these lattice work towers, which you know we're used to seeing all over the countryside, and they came up with the T pylon.
The Danish firm that designed it, wasn't it?
Yeah, yes, that's right. I think it was. They look a little bit like the things on the ski slope things where you go whizzing up and down those.
Well, a button lift pylon rather than anything bigger than that.
But we watched, we saw a lot of information about this and publicity. And in fact, we ran a story in the magazine several years ago about it. And the CGIs looked nice. You know, they were these rather elegant looking towers. And when I saw them in the flesh, as it were, I was very disappointed because they looked quite squat and stumpy. They don't look tall and elegant and as inconspicuous as I think they were intended to be. And I personally prefer the look of the lattice towers, which are taller and less solid because they're made out of lattice work.
I think that's the issue.
These pylons are fairly noticeable, actually. And they
interact with the wind more, I think.
Yeah. So I don't think I'm not surprised to hear that they haven't been a success with the locals. I don't think they look anywhere near as nice as they were supposed to look. And if they're making horrible noises and interfering with your internet connection, then clearly that's all bad news.
I'm somewhat surprised to hear that a finished structure doesn't look like the CGI.
Yes, you'd expect it to, wouldn't you?
Computers, you just can't trust them.
Yeah, you can't. Yeah.
Have we got time to talk about National Vegetarian Week?
Oh, yeah, if you like. Yeah, I'm quite happy to talk about that. We do like a national week and a national day, don't we? So it's National Vegetarian Week this week, is it?
It is, but that's not the one I've been getting press releases on. I've had no courgettes in the post. No one sent me any aubergine emojis. But I have had quite a lot of, as I'm sure you have too, Mental Health Awareness Week. It is also. We don't go bundle on these things, you know, but in a gentle recognition of the fact that I do see it as an issue. We ran a photo of an artwork installation that's gone up just off the Charing Cross Road in London.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
A giant high-vis vest made out of lots and lots of real high-vis vests sewn together. It's on a Galliford tri-site that some builder's merchant firm have stuck it up there on display. And the number of vests is the number of suicides in construction each year. I think it's the number of suicides each year. Anyway, it's highlighting the issue and making us aware of mental health.
Yeah. Recently, there have been stories in the national press about the incidence of poor mental health and suicide in the construction industry. And we know very well that it's a higher than average incidence of suicides in our industry, which is obviously something which is very regrettable.
But if you're having any mental health issues, talk to someone. I have no qualifications, I have no insight, or I'm glad to say, so far, no experience of the issue, and I hope it stays that way. But I do know that talk is good, as David and I, maybe this is why I don't know, it's our conversation every fortnight, Dave. That's it.
It keeps you going.
It does, yeah. You know. I enjoy our fortnightly meetings, and long may they continue.
Yeah, I agree. So
let's do it again next time.
Yes, let's. Yeah, let's do that.
Good plan. Right. But thank you, everyone, for listening once again to Reconstruction, but for another session. As always, I've been Phil Bishop and he's been David Taylor. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to Reconstruction, the podcast from the Construction Index. To keep up to date with the latest construction news and headlines, please visit theconstructionindex.co.uk and sign up for our free daily email news briefing.